providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're sticking to more precious metals as I am chatting with Chris Ritchie. He is the president of Silvercrest Metals. Silvercrest is traded on the TSX under the symbol SIL and the NYSE under the symbol SILV. Now, Chris, you just got back from site, and in all fairness, it's been a bit of slow news flow out of the company. The most recent news release was back on May 12th, which reported Q1 financials and general updates from the project. But since you were just at site, let's get a more comprehensive update on how everything's going out there. We'll start on the construction front. What updates can you give us in terms of construction here at the company's project down in Mexico, please, at the Las Chispas project?
Great. Thanks, Corey. Yeah, I just got back from there, spent 2 weeks down at site. What I was most impressed by, first of all, was the fact that the city that we built, it's 520 individual units for each miner to have their own housing unit. And typically, miners live with 4 to 8 people per house. So this is like luxury mining housing down there. But again, from risk mitigation, such a big focus of ours, we want to make sure that we can operate through all cycles. And some of our peers, people go home at night, they have exposure, they don't have quarantine camps. So some of the productivity issues that people are seeing now, as well as, if there's another wave, those are big risks. So for us, how we've handled that has been fantastic. Some of the other issues that are going really well is in a construction project, you've got tight schedules. Given that we have a fixed project, if you start to get off schedule, there is a lag and the people start waiting for their turn to get at it. You're paying for them to be there when they're not actually working. So your problems compound, and they compound pretty heavily. So the first 30% or so are really critical to stay on schedule. And so far we're on schedule, on budget. The earthworks is looking fantastic. So again, risk mitigation on the construction side is looking really good on that front. Underground development, I stood 26 meters away from the Bobby Vista splay, and you've heard us talk about that. That was our last piece of news on infill drilling. So these were ounces that are not in the mine plan as it stands. So again, being 26 meters away, we're very short order away from developing those ounces. And then next time we put out a new mine plan, we'll have those details in there, but you can imagine we're going after them, and we want the flexibility of having access to them. So the underground development's, progressing on budget, on schedule. So again, trying to have a lot of flexibility there. The stockpile itself is starting to look pretty large. Recall that we hope to have 9 months of production already sitting on the ground before we start the mill. So again, you'll hear me say it again and again on the risk management portion. That's going really well. That's a big part of what we're doing. In terms of Ausenco, they're doing a fantastic job. They certainly know what we're doing. We've got most of the tanks up now, just getting to late stages of that, which is looking great. And we still have plenty of room for drill rigs, So I think we've got 7 drill rigs at Las Chispas now, and 3 over at Picacho. So again, everything's humming along nicely. I'm definitely going to be knocking on wood here. But out of the gates, and that ramp up still expected in late Q2 next year. So we're just starting to get to that point where, people need to start thinking about us converting over from the traditional PNAV metric to free cash flow. And for us, that's where we really stand out.
So Chris, can you just summarize timeframes then? General timeframes when it comes for what investors should be focused on as the company does move towards that full scale production?
Sure. Generally speaking, this was a very short build, right? Usually you get into that big lull between, the feasibility study starting construction and cash flow, very short build. The drilling has been going, we're doing a lot of work there. The main focus, and you'll see this probably in the next little while from more detailed news, is we're coming to conclusion on the infill drilling. So that'll probably be in the next couple of months. And that sounds kind of boring, but it's actually not. These are ounces that we're increasing the degree of confidence in. We are hopefully going to be in a position to put them into a mine plan, which means if we have higher grade material, we can, prioritize that ore and take out some lower grade material. So again, we hope to make the current mine plan obsolete during that little lull between, you know, the feasibility study and cash flow, where most people aren't really able to drill. They're not really able to make much changes. You know, I've heard me say it before that, you know, our feasibility study was the good enough study. It was the good enough to get our money, and it was the good enough to stop the dilution. So again, in this next year, because again, late Q2 is when we hope to be getting up and running, you're still going to see a really aggressive drill program. And so that's going to be ongoing. And you're also just going to be seeing some investors starting to, you know, recognize that and start to step in as they see the risk start to come down. So yeah, we're getting pretty close there. And charge away. You know, we'll have intermittent drill news. We'll still be pushing. Again, capital efficiency is always going to be our focus. For those of you who know us well, we added $7 of value for every dollar we spent up to the end of 2020. So that's right before construction started and whatnot. So that number will change, obviously. So again, for us, you know, so far we probably delineated close to 8 to 10 million ounces, you know, from the previous news releases on the Bobby V's display. Well, at today's prices, that has the opportunity to be close to $20 of margin. You know, for us, we're probably spent in the neighborhood of $10 million. So if it's, you know, 8 million ounces times $20 a margin, that's $160 million before tax and discounting. You're probably getting to a point where that's 10 times of your return on invested capital. So, you know, for us to sort of get that into a mine plan in the next 18 months, that's going to add value. People who are really the financial model nerds, when you turn over the calendar and people update their model and you roll the CapEx that we spent out of there, you add that back to the valuation, right? So these are things, just that passage of time, that are really going to make a big difference. And like I said, there's a whole new audience that can start to look at us when we're in production, and our liquidity is already high enough. So part of our focus with the investors is making sure people who think that's a reasonable thought process are kind of getting in before the people who need to wait for that cash flow.
Let's focus a little bit more on the drilling then. As you mentioned, the infill program, you estimate there how many ounces you guys can add. It's one thing Silvercrest has been very good at, is adding ounces to the mine plan for cheap, actually, through the drill bit. What's the update that you can give us on the infill drilling here, but then also transitioning into more of the growth aspect of the drilling, exploration?
Sure. There's twofold in the near term drilling. Is we want to make sure we don't sterilize any ounces near the infrastructure. So if you start to, you know, build your underground development and your tunnels and whatnot, if you don't have enough structure around that, you know, you might not be able to mine other ounces. So we're going to make sure we're drilling in and around that area extensively to make sure that we're getting all that low hanging fruit. And again, from a capital efficiency standpoint, that stuff's, you know, right at our fingertips. So that's the best bang for the buck. We've got a lot of other targets at Las Chispas. Now, again, with capital efficiency, you poke away, you get some results back, you scratch your head a little bit, and then you poke some more. And then for us, once we tag into something, that's when we kind of throw 2, 3, 4, 5 rigs at it. So we're systematically going through the other, you know, call it close to 35 veins that are not in the feasibility study. So again, we've got drilling for years and years to come over here. So this is part of the dialogue we have with investors is, well, your NAV's, you know, a little bit on the higher end. And I was like, well, the free cash flow versus our peers is actually really attractive. It was like, well, if you grow into it, you know, it's more interesting down the road. And I'm like, our average finding cost per ounce to date has been 85 cents an ounce. So I would encourage investors or people listening, assume that it's $3 an ounce or $4 an ounce, you know, go forward in terms of what it costs us to find a new ounce. If it's still close to $7 to take it out of the ground, you're still about $11 in terms of a true total cost to get an ounce out. You're still in the bottom quartile. But again, when you think about that, what that does for mine life, potential expansion, and also, you know, free cash flow if those ounces happen to be higher grade, it really makes a big bang. So when you think about what it means for the next 1, 2, 3, 4 years, I mean, we are going to probably double the total meters drilled over the next, you know, 18 months of all that we've done since we started the company. So again, like, this growth is just right in front of us. We're just going to be systematic. When it comes to Picacho, we're still very, very busy over there. And for those who've been following that, we put out the one news release, you know, material that's over 600 grams a ton. If we get enough to be a standalone, that's fantastic. But if we ended up just getting 1 or 2 million tons over there, massive impact for us in terms of mine life and throughput expansion at Las Chispas, because that material could be trucked over to that facility. So again, we want people to look at the three-year program, and we want people to, you know, hopefully give us a pat on the back for being so systematic and being so diligent with people's capital.
Yeah, you guys have always been focused on the economics and how all of it fits into a general mine plan and trying to maximize, optimize that mine plan too. Chris, let's quickly get some macro comments from you regarding the precious metals sector. I know a lot of our listeners do like hearing from you in terms of what you're seeing and what you're hearing in a lot of your meetings with really larger funds, high net worth people. What are you watching for? What's the main theme here that should be the focus for precious metals investors?
Inflation. I mean, that's been on the tip of people's tongues, whereas last few years, it has definitely not been. So the irony here is the fund flow dynamic has the potential to really be volatile. And again, people who know us well, we have some charts in our deck that show that the PE multiples tend to come down when inflation goes up. So when you look at the broader market having the success it's had for the last 10, 12 years, talking about valuation being near like all-time highs, if inflation goes up and PE multiples do follow that historic trend lower, where does that money go, right? Right now, the blow up in crypto a couple weeks ago was about 2 times the total value of the entire precious metal cycle industry. So crypto could have, you know, could go up 100 times from here. But if people who are focused on, you know, a stable store of capital, a stable store of funds, that stable word's still in doubt. But again, then maybe there's more upside there. So, you know, people are starting to look for places to hide their money. Copper has more sensitivity to inflation than gold and silver does. And you can look what happened to the copper names in the last little while. I think some of those people are kind of probably taking some profits. So I think you're seeing a lot more people looking at the sector, but they just haven't moved their money yet. Recall, we've had 10 years of negative outflows in the precious metal sector. So that's pretty fascinating. I always look at the Crescat guy stuff. They're smart guys, and they're anyone else out there, it's worth taking a peek at this stuff or chatting with them. But they've got some really interesting charts on debt and free cash flow in the mining industry. Again, these miners have had to find religion in the last decade to clean up balance sheets. No money was available. They've got an interesting, Crescat's got an interesting chart in their presentation talking about the net debt to assets. And it's showing from their work that the mining sector, precious metal sector, is the healthiest industry out there. So as you're starting to see some volatility kick up, inflation chatter, money moving around a little bit, some things behaving a little strangely, to know that this industry as a whole is actually looking extremely healthy while no one's really paid too much attention, that's a great thing. This industry does not need prices to go higher for silver and gold. If the balance sheets and the free cash flow keep continuing, you're going to see people inching up their dividends. You're going to see the index waiting for this sector go higher, which drags in the passive funds that sort of mirror or mimic the industry weightings and the market weightings within the broader context. So we don't need it to go higher. So it kind of dovetails into us a little bit that if it goes higher, it's great. If we find more ounces, it's great. When we get to free cash flow, it's great. But we want to make sure we have a vehicle that if things go poorly for the industry or the market or everything else, we want people to have a high degree of confidence that we can weather that storm. So the industry can. I mean, that's what's really interesting right now is this is a really, really healthy industry with lots of free cash flow and really good balance sheets.
So then what are some of the key company specifics that you guys are doing to limit that downside risk, really set this company up or position this company in the precious metal space as one of those, in a way, defensive plays that has protection on the downside, but also has that upside component?
Yeah, and I mean, we sit around the table and talk about this where, you know, if you invest in gold and silver, to a certain extent, you're investing in financial disorder, So when the world's going to hell in a handbasket, people tend to run to gold and silver. These inflation number now, you're having 2 to 2.5% difference between the inflation rate and you know, 10-year bonds. So you get that those negative rates that are great for gold are getting even more negative these days. For us, this is the disorder. This is where things are getting a little strange. But we just sort of crested through our deal price of $9.20 US. We were kind of close to 10.20 last couple of days. I'm getting a lot of inbounds and a lot of people saying, well, now that you digested all that capital, and you know, some people said, oh, you raised too much money. And I say, well, I hope so. But we have the potential to have over $100 million US of excess capital to ride out a storm, to navigate any challenges, to be flexible with our mine plan, to drill more aggressively. So that it's not only gold and silver is good to go to in a bad market or financial disorder. We want our company to withstand that, right? So that $7 all-in sustaining cost and that balance sheet that it can hopefully take a few really nasty surprises and still bounce back strongly. We want people that have SilverCrest in their portfolio. And if things go really ugly, they just don't have to worry about us to the same extent they'd be worrying about some of the other names they might own. And if we can have that approach, these big funds, they need to own us for the downside just as much as the upside, right? These are funds that need to be there in the sector year round. And if we can hold on better than the people and weather that storm, then we're going to get, maybe they own us for half a position. And whenever the stock rolls over, they buy more. If the stock rips and goes crazy, they can trim some here and there. But that growth that might come with time and the how active we are in the drill bit, we've always gotten there. I don't know, maybe one day it'll stop, but we've always been able to keep up with the growth model. And that's free cash flow. Like I said, for us, that free cash flow is extremely unique. So it's a vehicle that gives you inflation protection while giving you income. I mean, crypto doesn't give you income. The dividend yield on the gold index is higher than the S&P and the Dow. So again, you're getting a lot of the things that people say they like in a name, but yet no one's really come to the space yet. So we're just trying to batten down the hatches. We're trying to make sure we don't do anything silly. We're trying to be really careful with everybody's money and to investors and saying, hey, own half a position. You know, when I talk to a retail broker, I would love for them to have it in all of their portfolios for their clients, but in a small amount. And if they like what they see, they can buy more. If the market rolls over and there's an opportunity to get it on sale, you can buy more. But if we want investors to look at us and say, you know, we trust your approach. We trust your business model. You know, we want you guys to have a reasonable cost of capital to manage assets. So I think, you know, we want to make that appeal to shareholders and say, hey, we got that downside, hopefully, knock on wood. We got the asset quality and we got the team that's done it before. And there's a really interesting next 24, 36 months in front of us here with no more stock coming to market, right? And I think that's a big part now that we've kind of gotten through that is we got our NOBO list. And for people who don't know what that is, it stands for non-objecting beneficial owner. So if anyone's got a retail account, you tick a box and it either tells people what you own or not, whether you've ticked that box or not. So we have 33,000 retail investors. And if you wanted to assume the $15,000 per person, that's $500 million. So we want those people in for the long haul. At the same time, we think we know where about 60-65% of our float is for big, happy institutional guys. So again, we want people to kind of buy it for the long haul, buy bits and pieces. But the fact that we have this much growth and free cash flow in front of us and our stock is this tightly held, you know, anyone who thinks it's interesting down the road, you know, the stock hopefully isn't as cheap down the road as it might be today. So we just want people to buy it for the protection as well as what's starting to get on the people's tongues, which is that inflation and growth and free cash flow story that a lot of the rest of the market is a little harder to come by.
All right, Chris, we're wrapping up the first hour here. Thank you again for your insights, both on what's going on with SilverCrest Metals and also some of those macro comments. Again, for everyone listening on the radio, you can listen to all of these segments in their longer forms on our website, kereport.com. And everybody, please keep in touch. My email is fleck@kereport.com. Send me your questions for the companies I've been featuring this week or any other companies that you are interested in. I'll happily follow up and get those addressed for you. I hope everybody has a great rest of your weekend. Thanks for tuning into the first hour. The second hour on the weekend show will be focused again more on the company updates from this week. Everybody, Chris, thanks for your time this weekend. Thanks for taking some time with us, and I hope you all have a great weekend.
Thanks, Chris.